This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, back this Wednesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime. First off this week, it's The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, his episode from October 20th, 1950, titled Stamped for Murder. Then it's Orson Welles in the Black Museum, an episode from the 1950s titled The Faded Tartan Scarf.
Stay tuned for Nero Wolfe. If the chimes shudder a little on Sunday afternoon, well, they know there's mystery in store Sunday with men of action like Mike Waring, better known as the Falcon, who brings his fearless and romantic touch to the solution of another mystery. After the Falcon, it's high adventure. Then the big guy steps in. The new private eye, Charlie Weil, concludes with a few casual homicides. The chimes mean mystery and action this Sunday afternoon on NBC. Transcribed.
My boss is the smartest and the stubbornest, the fattest and the laziest, the cleverest and the craziest, the most extravagant detective in the world, Nero Wolfe.
It's the adventure of Stamped for Murder, with that brilliant, eccentric private detective, orchid fancier and gargantuan gourmet, Nero Wolfe. Starring Sidney Greenstreet.
Instructions for this morning, Archie. Your notebook, please. First, Mr. Salinsbeck. Inform him that the Long Island peafowl he sent were most unsatisfactory. Peafowl's breast flesh is not sweet and tender unless it is well protected from all alarms, especially from the air, to prevent nervousness. Long Island is full of airplanes.
Look, Mr. Wolf,
I shall want a dozen chickens that have been raised on bluebirds and a fresh-killed lamb for tomorrow.
Mr. Wolf, please listen.
Mr. Goodwin, be quiet, and then dinner on the following day becomes a problem.
Mr. Wolf, dinner any day is going to be a problem if we don't pay Sausenbach's bill.
Then pay it.
With what? The bank account's empty.
Ridiculous. There were $4,000 yesterday.
But you bought that shipment of orchid bulbs from Weinold Gluckner. Mr. Wolf, we need money. You've got to stop eating and drinking beer long enough to earn some.
Phew. You're an alarmist.
Will you, for the love of heaven, stop turning down clients and turn an honest dollar? I've got a couple of prospects right outside the door.
Send them away.
No, sir.
Send them away. Tell them I've gone to Egypt.
Nothing doing, sir.
Confound you, Archie. Obey order. Send them away.
Miss Kent, Mr. Rodman, come in, please.
Thank you.
Confound you, Archie. You're mutinous.
Yes, sir, and you're stuck with it. This is Miss Gloria Kent and Mr. Rodman. They arrived as advertised with a pressing problem.
Good morning. You people are here by sufferance only. I shall speak to Mr. Goodwin about it later. Yes, indeed. I don't like pressing problems, Miss Kent. What are yours?
My father.
Indeed, I'm not a court of domestic relations, Miss Kent. What did your father do? Beat you? Withhold your earnings? Discourage your suitors? Mr. Goodwin should have informed you this office does not undertake cases involving marital or family problems.
But that's not...
If Mr. Goodwin had not been beguiled by your pretty face, he might have warned you and avoided this embarrassment to you and annoyance to me.
Now, take it easy, take it easy. How many times have I told you you don't know how to handle women?
Then suppose you let Miss Kent handle me.
Well, it's simply this, Mr. Wolfe. I had some money my mother left me. My father's just spent it without my permission. I want it back without a scandal.
Thanks, Miss Kent. How much? How spent?
$10,000. Father bought a treasure map.
Indeed? From whom?
A pair of swindlers named Cross and Halleck. They've driven him crazy, talking about fortune salvaged from the SS this and the SS that. He's got a map and old letters. He studies. He's childish.
Many fortunes have been recovered. Many more await on the sea bottom. How do you know your father has been duped?
Well, I know.
You do, Mr. Rodman.
Yes. Cross and Halleck bought some old letters for me, written by my grandfather from Hawaii. They used them to manufacture the map and evidence, and that's what they sold to Kent.
Father thought he was being so clever. He had the paper analyzed. Of course, the document research laboratory said the letters were genuine. They were. But something new had been added. I'd have never known if Mr. Rodman hadn't told me.
You're a party to the swindle, Mr. Rodman?
I was not. I never knew what they were up to.
Mr. Wolfe, you've got to help me. I can't do anything with Father. I can't convince him. Even Mr. Rodman can't do...
No, Miss Kent, I'm sorry. This is not for me.
But you must. You must.
Not in my office, madam. No tears. Please, please, Archie, stop her.
Okay, okay, okay.
Archie, when Miss Kent has finished her disgraceful exhibition, show them out.
How dare he walk out on a...
Easy, easy, easy. I know him. I know him. You don't. He gets into a panic when women cry, or else he's curious about what Fritz is cooking for lunch. Now, just wait a minute, please. Oh, aren't you ashamed of yourself walking out like that on that poor kid?
That hysterical gamma.
She's lost all of her money. She needs help.
I charge high fees, Archie.
So charge a small fee. Do you want her to starve?
Good heavens, starve? How monstrous.
I'm not kidding. While you'll be in here smelling your dinner, she and her father will be starving.
I thought you were bringing me a paying client.
Well, this is different. She's,
Beautiful. Archie, you're impossible. Oh, very well. Go back into them. Get names, addresses, facts. I am not committed to Miss Kent's case, but we'll see. Be a tribute I pay for your weakness for a pretty face.
Rodman and Gloria Kent were gone, however. So all I had were the few facts they'd given me before they met Wolf. I felt guilty about that when he came back into the office and sat down in his specially built chair. He closed his eyes and I glared at him. Well, how much of you is awake? Mr. Wolf. Well, they disappeared. Did you tell me you were going to help this girl just to get her out of the office, or did you mean it?
You're a gadfly.
No, sir. No, sir. You made a promise and you're stuck with it.
What did you get from Rodman?
Name, address, occupation. He's a librarian, that's all.
Very careless, Archie. You missed a significant point.
Such as,
How did Rodman discover the letters he sold were being altered by forgery and used for swindle? How did he locate the dupe, Mr. Kent?
I guess you're right. I'll ask him next time. But what about now? Are you going to get Gloria's money back?
I assume you call Miss Kent Gloria solely in order to annoy me. It does. Stop it. Get Cross and Halleck.
On my way.
You'll find them at the Hotel Bogart.
Wrong, sir. According to my notes, their address is...
Never mind their address. The Hotel Bogart is the headquarters for successful confidence tricksters. They celebrate their victories there while the money lasts. You will possibly find Cross and Halleck drinking whiskey or lunching. Probably both.
I located Cross and Halleck in the hotel bar and lured them back to our place on 35th Street. Wolf was sitting behind his desk with his hands crossed on his impressive middle, at peace with his lunch and the world when I ushered them in. He sat bolt upright and scorched me with a look. Good afternoon, Mr. Wolf. The tall one's name is Cross, the short one is Halleck. They want to help me invest my money. Gentlemen, Mr. Nero Wolf.
What?
Who?
Nero Wolf.
Hey, what is this?
Confound you, Archie. How drunk are they?
Not too drunk for business.
Let's get out of here. Come on.
Wait a minute. You want me to keep him here, Mr. Wolf?
Not by violence, Archie. Come back here, gentlemen. Unless you want 7 years in the state penitentiary.
Unless what? You got nothing on us, Wolf. Nothing.
I have the Kent case.
The Kent? That's a laugh. We're sitting pretty. Sitting pretty.
You are not, sir. You imagine you possess legal immunity. Mr. Kent believes you are a grotesque balderdash and will not sue for fraud. Miss Kent cannot sue because she is reluctant to accuse her father of wrongfully obtaining her money. Ergo, you think you are invulnerable.
Now, listen.
But you forget me. I'm a detective with a fee to earn.
A big fee.
Quiet, Archie. I am determined to get that fee. Therefore, as Miss Kent's agent, I can and will bring action against you. I'm indifferent to her tears or her father's disgrace. I'm indifferent to anything outside of money. You will return the $10,000 to me at once, sir, or you will be in jail by morning.
You mean that?
I do, Mr. Cross.
Alec, come here.
Come on, hurry.
Okay. Here, Mr. Wolf. Alec and I have decided we don't want to get in any trouble with you. Here's your $10,000.
Let's have it.
Give the dough to Kent, Mr. Wolf, and get the letters and map back for us. You've got a reputation for being tricky, but honest. We trust you. Come on, Alec, let's go.
Well, how about that?
Preposterous.
No, sir. Take a look. $10,000, genuine coin of the realm.
That man Cross is a fool. Does he imagine I'm to be fooled so easily?
What do you mean he left the money?
He surrendered too quickly, Archie. Too easily. And that money in the envelope he was carrying all ready to refund. Why?
Well, maybe he's got a better sucker. I heard him mention a Ben Sanford.
Nonsense. Does he need Kent's forged letters and map to cheat this Ben Sanford? Couldn't he prepare another set?
I guess you're right. Something's fishy.
In any event, it's no concern of mine, thank heaven.
Why not?
I'm not committed to Miss Kent in any way. As a favor to you, I undertook to regain her money. I have done that. You may take it back to her and obtain the forged papers in return.
But,
Silence, Mr. Goodwin. Go to your redhead charmer. Leave me in peace. I intend to spend this afternoon with my New World Atlas.
I left him 3,000 miles up the Amazon with his magnifying glass and drove up to East 69th Street. The Kent house was a broken-down little brownstone, and as I went up the stoop, the door opened and Gloria Kent burst out like a skyrocket. Hey, Miss Kent, easy, easy.
Let go of me. Let go.
What's wrong? What's wrong?
Wrong. Wrong. Nothing is wrong. Nothing at all.
Well, how about seeing your father?
You want to see my father? Come inside.
Oh, for the love of heaven.
Come inside, Mr. Goodwin. I'll introduce you. He's in a back room. Come right through the living room.
What else came through this living room? A hurricane?
No, Mr. Goodwin. Something else. There's my father, Mr. Goodwin.
What in the devil? He's dead. His throat's cut.
Father, this is Archie Goodwin from Nero Wolfe's office. He and his boss refused to help while they could. Maybe he can help you now.
Stop it.
All I'm good for now is revenge, that's all.
Stop
father.
It. Stop it and look at me. When did it happen?
I don't know.
When did you find him?
Just now.
Keep looking at me. Who went through this house like a hurricane? You?
No.
Where did you go after you left the office?
To the laboratory.
What lab?
Document research. The place that checked the map.
How long were you there?
Until an hour ago. I was with Mr. Rodman.
Keep looking at me. And then?
I had lunch.
With Rodman?
Alone. And then I came home.
All right. All right, now listen to me. I want you to go to Mr. Wolfe's house right now. Have you got cab there?
Yes.
All right, take a cab. I've got to stay here, but I'll call Mr. Wolfe and tell him you're on the way. Now get. I called Wolf, told him everything, and he instructed me to advise Inspector Kramer, who arrived with the homicide squad. I gave the inspector everything while the squad photographed and measured, print dusted and detected. At 3:30, Kramer took me back to the house on 35th Street for a fight with Wolf.
It's a great story, Wolf, great. Kent buys a phony treasure map. Everybody knows it's phony except Kent. But Cross and Halleck try to buy it back, and Kent gets himself murdered.
Did you find the map and letters in the house, Inspector?
No, I didn't.
The killer was after the map.
A phony map?
Certainly.
Why?
Well, if we knew that, we would know why Cross and Halleck so willingly paid back the money and why Kent was murdered.
Maybe it's not phony.
I'd better see the girl now.
Oh, you fancy her for the murder?
Well, I'll know after I ask a few questions.
Tonight. She's had a shock, Mr. Kramer. She needs rest.
Look, Wolf, I want her.
Why bother with her when there's so much to be done?
Yes, such as?
Cross and Halleck, find them. And the mystery man they spoke of, Ben Sanford. These are the men you want now, not this poor, overwrought girl.
Yeah. All right. The girl will be here for questioning tonight, though, huh?
Tonight, Mr. Kramer.
Okay. You'll hear from me later on.
Well, you buffaloed him out of that, okay. Say, why don't you want her questioned? Is she guilty?
I don't know.
Well, what did she say when she got here?
She said nothing. She never arrived.
She never what?
She never arrived.
Well, then why did you tell Kramer she was resting?
Would he have believed the truth? She must be found. More important, we must learn why forged letters and forged map produces turmoil.
Find the killer and you find the map. You said so.
I said the reverse, which is an altogether different statement. Archie, I want a photograph of that map. Get it.
Oh, sure. Any particular camera you want me to use?
You'll find the photograph at 200 Vanderbilt Street.
Are you kidding?
The lab cannot check the authenticity of all papers without photographing them in ultraviolet light, infrared light, and so on. If this document research lab has examined those papers, they will have photographs. Get them.
He got out of his chair and waddled back to the house elevator. It was 4 o'clock and time for his regular afternoon session with the orchids. I drove down to the document research laboratory on Vanderbilt and got such a shock that I grabbed the office phone and dialed Wolf at once.
This is Nero Wolf.
Mr. Wolf, Archie here.
What's the matter? Are you lost?
No, sir. No, sir, but I found something.
Photographs?
No, Mr. Wolf, I don't think you'll ever see any photographs of the Kent map. I don't think any were taken.
Indeed.
But guess who runs the document research laboratory? No, don't guess. You probably know. A man named Ben Sanford, and he's sitting right here looking at me.
Bring him home with you.
Home? But it's 4 p.m. This is the sacred hour when you pray over your orchids.
Then Mr. Sanford can join the ceremony. Hey, how about this place? How about it? There must be a million flowers up here.
No, not flowers. Orchids only. Mr. Wolf has 10,000 plants.
Never saw anything like it.
And you never will again, brother.
Hey, what kind is that on the bench?
Oh, that's our pride and joy. Odontoglossum harianum. Above them, the Van Peter Serrana. And the pink ones are the Coelogiani pandoratas. Now, the large object, mulching flower pots, is Nero Wolf. Mr. Wolf, Ben Sanford.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hi. I came along to be obliging. I've got nothing to say about anything.
How much have you offered Cross and Halleck for their treasure map?
No comment.
Mr. Sanford, I'm going to make some assumptions. I assume that you are not, in fact, a document expert, but an accessory to the fraud of Halleck and Cross.
No comment.
That you actually prepare fraudulent maps for those swindlers, and then in the guise of an expert guarantee their authenticity.
No comment.
For this you must answer. You did guarantee the authenticity of the map and letters Kent bought. It's on record.
All right, I did.
Then will you admit they were forged?
What are you, a comic? No.
You guarantee the value of the Kent map?
Yes.
As an expert?
Yes.
Then you've convicted yourself of murder.
Murder? What is this?
Mr. Kent was murdered, sir. Evidently for the map and letters he bought. But of all persons involved, you alone believe in the value of the map. No one else does. Therefore, you alone would have murdered Kent for the map.
For the love of... Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Chew it over, brother. Chew it over. Either way, he's got you.
Okay. Okay, you want me to level? Here it is.
Level, Archie.
Okay, boss. Thief-type talk. It means tell the truth.
It's like you say, the letters were bought from Rodman. I forged the map and evidence on them. I guaranteed them to Kent. It was a swindle.
The letters are without value?
Oh, sure, they're old, that's all, from 1851. Just tired family gossip and stuff.
Indeed. There we have the problem again, Archie. Mr. Kent is swindled with a map and letters that are known to be worthless. He alone believes the fantasy of the treasure.
There isn't any treasure, never was.
Yet Cross and Halleck refunded the swindle money so eagerly. It is obvious they want those worthless documents back badly. Someone else wants them so bad, he murders Mr. Kent. Why?
I don't know.
Archie, we must find the girl. There's a chance she turned to Mr. Rodman for refuge. I'm sorry, you'll have to go there at once. If the girl isn't there, bring Rodman.
Yes?
Hello, Rodman. Remember me? I'm Archie Goodwin from Nero Wolf's office.
Oh. Oh, yes, of course.
I came to get Gloria Kent. There's been a change in plans. Tell her to come out, please.
Gloria? Well, she's not here. Why should she be?
Haven't you heard?
Heard what?
Well, I guess you'd better come down and see Wolf.
Mr. Goodwin, I'm afraid I can't. I'm rather busy.
Look, Rodman, maybe you ought to know. Old man Kent was murdered.
What?
Yes. Yes, just after you and Gloria left us.
Kent murdered? Well, this is awful, Mr. Goodwin.
You want to see Mr. Wolf now? Get your hat.
Murder?
Well, believe me, I never wanted this. I'm going to tell Nero Wolfe the whole mess. Every word of it.
Okay, then. Come on, let's go.
Yes, of course. Just a minute. I'll get my hat in the bedroom. Murdered? Kent, I never dreamed.
Come on, Rodman. Come on, Rodman. Come on. What? I didn't hear you. Oh, Rodman. What the...
Oh!
Rodman. Oh, Rodman. Good Lord. What next? Come on, come on.
This is Nero Wolfe.
Archie here. We've had a tough break.
Yes?
While I was waiting for Rodman at the front door, he went into the bedroom for his hat. The killer was there.
How do you know?
He cut Rodman's throat.
Terrible.
The back window was open. It's a ground floor apartment. He was out and gone before I had a chance.
Archie, where were your wits?
Let me alone. I've had a man murdered 20 feet from me. You think I'm cheering?
Mr. Kramer is here, and he has news for us, Archie. He could not locate Cross and Halleck in their apartment. They had not been home all day. Maid informed him that she was waiting for her weekly salary.
Well, so what?
She was most angry and peppery, Mr. Kramer informs me.
Red pepper?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, maybe I know what you mean. I'll try to deliver the goods this time. Goodbye. I drove down to the apartment house on Gramercy Square where Cross and Halleck lived. Took the elevator up to the 10th floor, found the right door, and slipped in with a pass key. Come on out. Come out wherever you are. I know you're in here. You fooled Kramer pretending to be the maid, but you didn't fool Wolf. You'd better... Gloria! Cut it out! Cut it out, you idiot! Lay off!
No.
Archie, you dope. Archie Goodwin from Nero Wolf's office. Remember me?
Go.
Give me the gun, Gloria. Give it to me. Ah, that's right. Who did you think I was?
Halleck.
Oh, brilliant. So Wolf figured you out, huh? Well, you are a brave girl. They killed your father. You came up here and waited for them. You were going to kill them right back, huh? Oh, that red-headed temper. And you bluffed Kramer into thinking you were the maid.
I had to do something. It was the only thing I could think of. To come here and kill him.
Well, you're coming home with Archie. And just remember one thing. When Wolf's working for you, don't try to do any thinking. It only gets in Wolf's way. I got Gloria Kent back to the house at 7 o'clock. I parked the car, brought her into the office, and got the shock of my life. There was a convention on. Wolf was there with Inspector Kramer representing the cops. Cross, Halleck, and Sanford were there representing the crooks. When Kramer saw Gloria, he scowled first at her and then at Wolf.
So it was a slick one after all, Wolf. You didn't have the girl. You had no intention of producing her.
Please, Mr. Kramer, that can wait. There are other matters more important. I dine at 8. That leaves me 1 hour to solve your murders.
Murders? More than one?
Yes, 2. Elmer Rodman.
By heaven, Goodwin, if you...
Please, Mr. Kramer, not now. First, Miss Kent. Good evening, Miss Kent. I presume you have met these gentlemen, Cross, Halleck, and Sanford?
I'll
take your purse, please.
Why?
Don't think me as naive as Mr. Goodwin, miss. When you left your home after the murder of your father, you took the map and letters with you. They are in your purse now.
Well, that's true.
Archie, the purse. Thank you. We have here an interesting situation. There exists some old letters and map, forged and fraudulent. They're worth $10,000 and more to Cross and Halleck, and worth 2 murders to a killer. Why? There must be something of great value in the letters.
Yes, such as?
Something which Mr. Sanford could not see, although he worked on the document closely. Yet something which could be made manifest. What is the answer, Miss Kent? You know it?
I swear I don't.
Secret writing, Archie. Bring the chafing dish from the dining room.
Right.
Secret writing?
I saw nothing when I worked on those letters.
Naturally, Mr. Sanford, the writing is invisible. The heat is an agent. It makes most forms of secret writing visible.
The chafing dish, boss.
Thank you, Archie. Place it before me and light it.
Right.
Now I open Miss Kent's purse. From it, you see, I withdraw these ancient letters which he took from her house after her father's murder.
That's not true.
Archie.
That's enough, Gloria. That's enough. From now on, you just listen.
We remove the letters from the envelope and toast them gently. The secret ink vintage 1851 will easily succumb to the agency of heat.
Careful. Those envelopes will catch fire.
Hey, they're caught.
Don't be upset, Mr. Cross, Mr. Halleck.
The envelopes.
They'll burn safely in the dish. We can concentrate on the writing. Watch closely. I don't want to be accused of trickery.
You fat fool. The envelopes are everything.
Put them out, Sanford. Don't sit there. Put them out.
Why, Mr. Halleck?
Well, the stamps, the missionaries, they're worth a fortune.
The missionaries? Of course. You know that. Mr. Cross knows. So does Mr. Sanford, right?
Yeah.
Of course Sanford knows, you old fool.
Mr. Sanford is not alarmed. Why not, sir?
I don't know what you're talking about.
$50,000 or $100,000 is burning before your eyes, Mr. Sanford. Cross and Halleck are burning their fingers, putting out the flaming envelopes. And you sit there quite indifferently. Why?
Well, I'm
sorry. You know the value of the missionary stamps on the letters you bought from Rodman. But you know these aren't the real letters. Isn't that it?
Not the real letters?
I told you I'm tough to crack, Wolf. You didn't fool me with those dummies.
Dummies? How do you know? Mr. Cross didn't know. Mr. Halleck didn't know. How did you?
Well, I...
I'll tell you, sir. Only one man could know I was framing Miss Kent as a decoy. Only one man could know I prepared these dummy letters and pretended to take them from her purse. And that is the killer. The man who murdered her father and stole the map and letters this morning. You, sir, Mr. Sanford.
Well, I'll be...
Mr. Kramer, there's your killer. You'll find the missing map and letters on him or concealed in his home or office. You won't need the evidence anyway. Look at his face. He's self-confessed.
Self-confessed like fun? He was booby-trapped.
No, Mr. Crane. Not a complicated case, really. Very simple. Elmer Rodman sold a packet of old family letters to the swindlers for a small sum. They used the letters to perpetrate their fraud on Miss Kent's father.
And the stamps on the letters were valuable?
They were a special Hawaiian issue 1851, Miss Kent. Nicknamed missionaries, because missionaries used them for writing home. They are extremely rare stamps worth upward of $25,000 each.
Hey, no wonder they were worth two murders. We found five of them on Sanford.
Excellent. Somewhere or other, Rodman discovered the value of the stamps after he sold the letters. In his effort to get them back, he communicated his discovery to the swindlers, Cross, Halleck, and Sanford.
So that's why they refunded the money so fast?
Precisely, in an effort to have the sale rescinded. Rodman sought out Kent and tried to convince him of the fraud. Alas, he would not listen to the truth, Mr. Kramer.
Oh, I get it. And while the others were hassling around, Sanford tried to steal a march and quietly resorted to murder.
There you have it.
Ha-ha! Great job, boss, great job. So Gloria not only gets her 10 grand back, but 5 times 25, which is about 125,000 worth of goodies. Now, figuring your rates by the hour, that means you've done a gratis job worth about...
Miss Kent, I did not know will I demand a large fee for what I've done. I will not go back on my word. But I can beg for a favor.
I'll only be too happy to...
Wait. I asked something that would not be easy to grant.
What is it?
Will you use your red hair, your pretty face, your admirable figure, and your ample fortune to lure Mr. Goodwin away from this house tonight? I would like to enjoy my dinner in peace.
That won't be difficult, Mr. Wolf.
Let's have an understanding right now, Gloria. Difficult for you or for me?
I'll be delighted.
Indeed. To spend an evening with Mr. Goodwin, there is only one word for you, Miss Kent. Intrepid.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's story by Alfred Bester was based on the famous characters created by Rex Stout, produced by Edwin Fadiman, and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Wally Mayer as Archie Goodwin, and Gene Bates, Howard McNair, Jay Novello, Larry Dobkin, Bill Johnstone, and Herb Vigran. Music by Joseph Enos. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Careworn Cup. Don Stanley speaking.
The preceding was transcribed. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. The chimes ring for Dennis Day and Judy Canova tomorrow night on NBC. Also, Judy Canova prepares to go operatic tomorrow because her special guest is Ezio Pimza.
This is Chester William Bendix Reilly. The Man Called X follows on NBC.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. A museum of death. Yes, here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a fountain pen, a cufflink, a high-heeled shoe, all are touched by murder. Now here's a scarf, torn and ragged, the faded tartan a cheap reproduction of the honorable colors of the Stuarts, red with green blue crossings and a double over check of white and yellow. This scarf belonged to Walter Hoffman Pievsky, known to the police and his friends in the underworld as the Pike.
There's no doubt about the scarf being his property, Superintendent. He was wearing it when he was sent to Dartmoor 10 years ago.
Ah, the description tallies, does it?
Exactly. It's all written down in the prison property book, even to the patch on it.
So the Pike's our man. Right. Well, get him.
And get him they did. And all because of a scarf, appropriately known in Cockney circles as a choker. The Pike applied his choker to a human throat. The throat of the driver of a post office van. The Pike pulled the choker too hard. It was instrumental in convicting him of murder. And that's why it's earned its place here in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Well, here we are in the Black Museum. Beyond these gray walls, the mighty roar of London never stops. But in here, it's quiet. Come with me under the frieze of death masks, the masks of criminals of bygone days, suspended grimly under the ceiling. Come. To our right and left, rows of murder exhibits, each one carefully labeled. That cut glass scent spray is attractive even now. Might even take its place on Madame's dressing table, till we stop and read the label written under it. Yes, it's been used to spray anesthetic over the faces of helpless women as a prelude to murder. No sickly aroma now as we squeeze the bulb, Except for its grim associations, the fragile exhibit is insignificant, easily broken. But it was strong enough to hang the man who used it. There, there's a brass candlestick. Over there, a taper to go with it. Now, here we are. Here's what we're looking for. The faded tartan scarf. As I take it out of the showcase, I ask you to come with me back to the time when this scarf was new, 15 years ago. Walter Pevsky bought it from a stallholder in one of London's famous street markets, Petticoat Lane.
Yes, sir. We'll take one of the scarves, mister.
Right, sir! Finest worsted we're wearing! What's your clan? Campbell's, Cameron's, MacDonald or MacLeod? All genuine tartan today down from the islands.
All right, all right. I've bought it already. Don't need to give me that stuff. I'll take this one.
It's the Stuart! And better than that you cannot do! Not half a nicker! Not five bob! Half a crown and cheap at the price! Thank you very much. Come and get your Scotch checkers from Honest John McKay. If your next won't...
While Honest John continued his honest trade, the Pike went about his own particular business. It was less exhausting than John's, and it was worked from a public call box. In professional circles, they called it the hospital trick.
Is that Mrs. Peterson speaking?
Yes, who's that?
The London Hospital here, Mrs. Peterson.
Hospital? Why, what's happened?
Well, there's no need for immediate alarm, but I'm sorry to say that your husband has met with a serious accident.
Oh, Bill? Is he hurt? Oh, no, what's happened?
He was knocked down by a bus in the Whitechapel Road about half an hour ago.
A mean, crude trick. But more often than not, it worked. While the stricken woman hurried to the hospital to find the husband, who, of course, was not hurt at all, the Pike would visit her house. With the coast clear, he'd help himself to whatever he could lay his hands on and get out before the bewildered woman returned. And you notice that the Pike could almost camouflage that accent he had. This gift gave him a confidence which was almost his undoing. One time when he and some friends were removing the entire contents of a house while the owners were away on holiday.
What about the piano, Pike? Do we take that?
Of course we take everything. Who'd think of moving out and leaving the piano behind, eh?
You'll get as blooming well as you will. Okay, boys, piano next. Oh, crikey, the phone. Here, what do we do about that? Did it ring, I suppose?
No. Maybe it's someone seen the van outside and checking up. I'd better answer it.
Yeah, yeah, go easy,
Don't Park. Worry, Ed. I know my job, don't I?
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Is that Mr. Wilson?
No, I'm awfully sorry. He won't be back until about 7 o'clock. I'm his brother-in-law. Can
oh,
I help you?
If your sister's there.
Oh, Julie's just gone out for half an hour. Can I take a message?
Yes, I think you can. I'm her brother. Who the blazes are you?
Quick, boys. Let's get out of here.
Right out.
So the piano was left behind after all. But Pike got away with most of the household belongings and observed. Not only were his operations becoming bolder, but he had planned his action carefully. He even knew that Mrs. Wilson's first name was Julie. But he didn't know she had a brother. That must have shaken him, because from then on he changed his tactics. The Pike entered the motor racket, a racket which was to take him in turn from Dartmoor prison to the scaffold. But in his early days as a motor thief, there was still a trace of strange humor about his work. The padlocked car was a case in point.
Who's that?
Okay, Eddie, it's only me. You wouldn't go reaching for a gun when Parky walks in on you.
I'm sorry, Pike, it's me nerves.
Well, relax. Now listen to me, I've got a job for you.
Nah, I'm laying off for a bit.
Okay, then who pays the rent?
Oh, I'm only going in for the small stuff.
Well, this is a small job I'm offering you.
What is it, busting into the Bank of England, eh?
No. It's a simple matter of knocking off a nice new motor.
Well, what's the dope?
Well, it's this way. The car belongs to a fellow named Lambert who lives at 14 Graysdyke Crescent. See? He can't get it into the garage beside the house on account of it being too big.
Why didn't the mug measure it before he bought it?
Well, that's not our concern. He locks the car up at night, and I've obtained a duplicate set of keys.
Oh, Oh, nice work, nice yeah. work. Here, what do you want me in on the job for? You can do it yourself.
Oh, there is a little complication.
Oh, I thought there would be.
This fella Lambert is like a mother with a child over this car. He fixes it to a lamppost every night with two big padlocks and a double chain. Wonder he doesn't put a nappy on it, too.
Well, what do we do? Take the lamppost as well as the car?
And before I tell you, are you in with me?
All right, Pike, I'm in.
Then listen to what I tell you.
In the early hours of the following morning, the Pike and his assistant went along to Graysdyke Crescent, and there, sure enough, chained to the lamppost outside number 14, was a fine new motor car, its cellulose and chromium work glinting invitingly under the lamplight.
So special, anyway. What did I tell you? We can clean up 450 on this, and all we've got to do is to remove the back wheel, which is chained to the lamppost. We put on the spare and we're away.
Okay, Pike, let's get cracking.
The offending wheel was removed from the axle and left, still chained, to the lamppost. And by the light of the helpful rays from above, the spare wheel was bolted on, the tools were replaced in the boot, and the two men climbed into the car.
I hope that ignition key of yours works, Pike.
Of course it works. I tried it out last night.
Ah, good for you.
And here we go. I told you it was going to be easy, didn't I, Ed?
It's money for old Roper. Ah, you're a good un, you are, Pikey. Just let me know when you need any more help. I'm your man.
Walter Pievsky pulled his tartan scarf snugly around his throat and agreed that he would certainly keep his assistant in mind. The car itself was taken to a garage, where its numbers and appearance were carefully changed and, in due course, found its way by devious routes back to the open market. The Pike, of course, had to split the profits which hurt him, so on his next job, he decided to work alone. And it was the next job which put him on the long, long walk which was to finish on the scaffold.
Now, what's the number of that gouge? Ah, here it is, I've got it. If this works, Pike, my lad, you're in the money. But it all depends on how good I can sound on the phone. I'll copy my father's voice, twist his soul. Here we go.
Motors. Good evening.
Hello? Brins?
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
My name is Maurice Blouet of 17 Granford Court.
Oh, yes, sir. I know. The big block of flats in Colleton Drive.
That's right. I am staying here with a friend, Major General Lewis.
Oh, yes, sir.
He tells me that you have a new Rolls Coupe in your showroom.
Yes, sir. Indeed we have.
Yes, well, I'm anxious to take such a car back to the continent with me, but time is pressing.
Are you at 17 Granford Court now, sir?
Yes, if someone could bring round the car, I should like to see it.
Right, I'll be with you in a quarter of an hour, sir.
Are you sure that is not too much trouble?
Oh, no trouble at all, sir. Thank you very much for ringing.
Thank you. I should be waiting for you.
15 minutes later, the car drove up to the block of flats. The driver salesman got out and went inside. Entering the lift, he went up to the third floor and knocked on the door of number 17. Needless to say, the occupier had never heard of either Maurice Blouet or Major General Lewis. But while the questions and explanations sorted themselves out, Walter Pievsky was already driving the luxury car toward the garage where practiced hands were waiting to completely change its identity. First, what the Pike did not know was that he had provided the police with a vital clue that was to lead him first to prison and then, by reason of the tartan scarf, to the gallows. But the scarf was yet to earn its place, of course, among these strange exhibits here in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Thank you.
And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
We return to Walter Pievsky, known as the Pike, elated at the success of his confident scar trick. He made a handsome profit on the rolls, and despite the fact that the police subsequently traced it, they never traced the theft back to the Pike, not until he tried the same operation again. Certainly he changed the district, but, as is so often the case with a regular criminal, he develops regular habits, and the routine served up to the local garage was almost exactly as before.
Yes, I'm staying with Sir Leslie, and he tells me you've got that straight eight in the showroom. I'm most anxious to take a car back to the continent with me, but time is pressing, and
I'll be delighted to bring the car around to you right away, sir, if that's convenient.
If you're sure that it's not too much trouble.
No trouble at all, sir. I'll be with you in 10 minutes.
Oh, that is most kind. Thank you. Excellent.
But you wouldn't think it was so excellent from your point of view if you knew what was happening at the garage, Pike.
Hello? Give me the police. Is that Scotland Yard?
Yes, information room.
Listen, my name is Slater. I run a garage, Carlsbrook Street, North 1.
Yes, sir?
A few weeks ago, the local police warned me about a car thief who worked a telephone trick, asking salesmen to take cars round to fake addresses for inspection.
Rung you, has he, Mr. Slater?
Yeah. It might be him, or it might be genuine. But he asked me to take a car round to 21 Goldstone Court, Cattimore Street.
On the advice of Scotland Yard, Mr. Slater took the car to Goldstone Court. To make it easier for the thief, he left the doors unlocked and went into the building. When he was safely inside, the Pike left his telephone box and walked smartly over to the waiting motor. There were just two things he didn't know. First, an ignition wire had been snipped. And second, he was being watched. She'll never start until that broken wire is mended, Pike. You're wasting your time. You're going to waste a lot more time, too. 7 years, to be exact.
Hello, sir. You're having a bit of starting trouble.
Oh, hello, officer. Yes, I don't know what's happened here.
I'm used to this sort of thing. So is the other constable here.
Oh, there's two of you.
There's a lot more at the end of the road. Suppose you hop out of that and let us see whether we can't get the car going for you.
No, I can manage.
All the same, you might let us have a go for you.
Okay.
That's the idea. Are you the owner of this car? Hold him, George. He's got a knuckle there, sir.
Let me go, you swamp!
No, you don't.
Oh, God. Put the bracelets on him, quick. You all right, 71?
Oh. Well, how is he?
Looks as if his jaw's broken, Inspector. Right, take this man to the station. What's his name?
I ain't talking.
Very well. I'm charging you with grievous bodily harm and resisting arrest for the attempted theft of this vehicle. There may be further charges.
There were further charges, including the theft of the big rolls. Walter Pievsky, alias the Pike, had played the same game once too often, and a search of his flat in the East End produced more evidence of his varied career in crime. The policeman waiting for him to make his first mistake. This time he'd done it. At the Old Bailey, he pleaded guilty to over 100 crimes, and there were hundreds more with which he was never charged. He was sent to prison for 7 years, and immediately on his reception, his personal belongings were entered in the property book, and he was wearing the tartan scarf which later was to hang him.
Silviet, grey, 7.5, collar, 16, brown, one scarf, red background, green and blue stripes, white and yellow overcheck.
A canned steward.
How do you know that, Pievsky?
The fellow I bought it from in Petticoat Lane told me.
I'll take his word for it. Oh, there's a small tear, 5 inches in one corner. Been roughly patched. Better put that down.
Don't worry, boys. I won't accuse you of doing it.
Don't you worry. Out. I'll be retired by then. One pair of leather gloves, size 8, one pair of black socks, 10, brown shoes, neat.
The tartan scarf had been duly entered, and little did the retiring prison officer dream that his hastily scribbled details were to be subsequently brought up as key evidence in a murder trial. But Pievsky signed the list of his personal property, and for the next 7 years he was a guest of His Majesty's government in the most famous prison in England, Dartmoor. But in 1946, justice had run its course. The Pike was given back his personal property, which included the tartan scarf, of course, all duly signed for. And so he was released upon a battle-scarred London.
Time passed, and he added to his lawful wages by meager pickings from the black market. And more time passed, until one day the inspiration came to him like a bolt from the blue. He mulled it over in his mind. He carried out the research, and not until the plants were cut and dried did he put Ed Javison in the picture.
This is going to be the cleanup, Eddie.
Yeah, what is it, Pike?
We're going to stick up a post office van, see?
A post office van?
Shh. I've been standing in for a chap selling papers right outside a big post office in the West End. Every night I watch the mailbags coming out and going into the vans around 6 o'clock. Huh? Well, the other night I hired a car and followed one. It cut through Braston Mews to Park Lane.
Yeah, did you say you hired a car?
Yes, what about it?
Never mind. Go on.
Well, I had it out 3 nights and I found the vans don't change their route. It's the Mews every time. Cuts off a bit of traffic, you see?
Yeah. Go on.
Now, the Mews are very dark. Badly bombed and no residents that I could see.
Yeah, I'll get it, yeah.
All we have to do is get a fast car and wait there until the last van comes through.
Yeah, how many are there?
Only two. We draw our car out in the path of the second one as if we were going to back into the Gannard, see?
Yeah.
The van stops.
Yeah.
We fix the 2 men in it, fill up our car from the back, and bring the stuff back here to sort.
To sort? Oh, I like that. Yes. Here we can bring it through the back way. When do we do it?
Well, I think our most profitable haul will be tonight, Friday.
But what about a car?
Oh, you can leave that to me.
And Walter Pievsky ran true to form. He wanted a fast car in a hurry. He applied the methods he knew. He worked the telephone trick on a young and trusting motor salesman who duly delivered a shining, high-powered limousine to a block of flats. As he disappeared into the entrance full of expectation, the Pike drove off rapidly to Braston Mews, where his partner was waiting for him. The timing was perfect. As the car stopped, the first post office van was already approaching.
Here, keep your head down, Ed. Here it comes. The second one won't be more than a minute or so behind. We must turn the car broadside onto it.
How did you get this batter?
I'll tell you later. It's hand-picked, see? Plenty of room in the back for the luggage. There we are. Nothing can get by now.
What happens if something tries to get through before the van arrives?
Well, we make way for it and come back another night if necessary. Here, what's this?
It's the van. We're going to be all right.
And nobody about. Couldn't be better. Now, get out.
Yeah?
Keep your chin tucked into your scarf like me.
Oh, no.
Pretend to be pushing the car.
Right.
What's up, Comptown?
Oh, yes. I'm
afraid so. Can you give us a push?
Sorry, mustn't leave the van.
Oh. Well, look, in that case, one of you'd like to earn yourselves 10 bob, eh? If you could ring this number for us when you get to your own destination, it's my garage.
I'd log in and send a breakdown for you, eh?
That's the idea.
Oh, don't mind doing that for you. I'll do it for nothing.
Oh, thanks, Sam. You're very kind. If you've got a pencil, I'll jot down my name. It's rather a difficult one.
Yeah, here's a pencil.
Oh! Help! Dirty thieves! Oh! That's got the both of them.
Good. We'll start getting the bags out, quick.
No, you don't.
I'll set you up, you sniveling idiot.
I'm choking. This skull's choking me.
Yeah, quick with the bags, Ed.
Oh, no, here they come. What going? You're swinging for the...
Start getting the stuff in the car.
Okay.
Right. That's about as much as we can take. What's happened to the driver?
Oh, don't worry about him. Get moving.
Here, look at his tongue. His eyes. You've killed him.
Stop talking. Get on with the job.
There's a car coming. They've got us in their headlights. It's the cops.
Well, let's get out of here. Oh, tight on the corner.
Keep going. They're after us. Oh, watch the traffic lights. They're red. Something's coming.
Got through.
Oh, I thought we'd had it. Oh, are the police cars held up by the other car?
But get away, Ed. I'm going to make it.
Put them in! Slow up! We can't get round!
Ed Javison died in that crash, so mutilated that his body could not be identified. By some miracle, the Pike escaped and staggered away into the shadows. But his tartan scarf was still round the throat of his victim, lying in the Mews. Now let Superintendent Brandreth take up the story of the hunt.
Well, the hunt was soon over.
In fact, as soon as the car was reported stolen, I had a call from one of my inspectors.
I thought you'd like to see this.
What is it, Harrison? Oh, stolen car. Well?
Well, I've checked with criminal records, sir. There was something familiar about the method. You know, calling up a garage and getting the salesman to deliver the car to a block of flats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the list of men who practiced that. Now, these two are inside at present.
Yes.
This one's going straight. Well, he's out of London anyway.
That leaves this one, Walter Piefsky.
Yes, sir. The Pike.
Know where to find him?
Yeah, he's sharing a place with a man named Javison in the East End.
Right. Bring him in.
Yes, sir.
But before the Pike was picked up for questioning about the car, his scarf was...
he recognizes the one which we believe Piefsky had stolen. In theory, the evidence against him was already piling up. If he was the car thief, he was probably the murderer as well. But I needed that extra piece of evidence. I called for everything that was known about him, including the list of his personal property which he had signed in prison. It was a shot in the dark, but it yielded results.
There's no doubt about the scarf being his property, Superintendent, even to the patch on it.
Within 24 hours, the Pike was caught. Still dazed by the car crash, he offered no resistance. In due course, he was convicted of the murder of William Price, the driver of the post office van. And at 8 o'clock, one cold morning in February, he was hanged. All because of this tartan scarf, which has earned its place today in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Now here, in person, is Orson Welles.
Under English law, there are no degrees of murder, and the death sentence has to be pronounced on a man or woman convicted of the crime. Recommendations to mercy by the jury are always carefully considered. But in the case of Walter H. Piefsky, no such recommendation was made. The evidence against him was unshakable, and on the eve of his execution, he reproached himself bitterly, not for the death of his victim, or even his unfortunate partner, but for two other reasons. The supreme crime of murder had brought him no profit, and as his last hour approached, he became increasingly angry at his own forgetfulness. Ah, yes, they usually overlook something. And that's why the faded piece of tartan has earned its place here among the other exhibits in the Black Museum. Now, until we meet again in the same place for another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attractions, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch, produced by Harry Allen Towers. Thank you.
that's case closed for this week. If you want to hear more from Nero Wolfe or Black Museum, visit relicradio.com. Search for those. You'll also find links to the other podcasts there, links to the forum, Shoutcast stream, and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.